Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
Well, what a fabulous episode that was. What an inspiring lady.
She's a whirlwind.
Unbelievable, I think isn't it?
Talk about... What is it, juggling balls or spinning plates? She's got a fair few of those.
Yeah, I think she's definitely in the category of say yes and work out how to do it later.
No fear.
Absolutely. I think she's going to inspire people generally, but particularly females who are looking to move into the world of business. When they look at what she's achieved, it really shows there are no limits to what can be done.
And I think surround yourself with good people.
Yeah.
Who will look after you and keep you safe.
Yeah.
It was a great episode. Yeah. Great episode.
I really hope people take a lot from it, and I'm sure you will find something interesting in this. If you do, please share the link with a friend or a colleague. And if you could subscribe, you'll find out about future episodes. That would be amazing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So here we are. We're very fortunate with another special guest. They keep coming.
They do. They just are special guests every week.
Exactly. And this week, we are very fortunate. We have Saba Arif join us. And Saba is the founder and CEO of Smart Dental Compliance and Training. So welcome, Saba. How are you?
Yeah, good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction.
No, thank you for joining us. I'm looking forward to our conversation today because there's so many facets to what you have done and what you're currently doing, which will be very interesting to explore. But before we start all that, can we go right back to the beginning and your background and understand, you know, how did your parents set you up for the person you've become today? What was your childhood like?
Yeah, childhood was pretty intense, to be honest.
Intense? Wow, that's a word for childhood.
Yeah, that is. I haven't heard that one before. Intense childhood.
Intense in the sense that my parents had, because I was the oldest daughter, and the first girl to be born in my mum's side. So my mum's the oldest as well. So I was the first grandchild. So I wouldn't say I was spoiled, but everybody in the family had so many dreams and aspirations for me. And one of the thing, a typical Asian thing is, are you going to become a doctor or are you going to become a dentist? So which one is it going to be? So I had a lot of pressure growing up to go into the medical field, and my parents really encouraged me as well. And they had this thing that, no, I really want my daughter to become a doctor or a dentist. I don't know what it was, but it was always that. And she was.
But it's a real recurring theme there, Saba. We hear from lots of people the parent pressure. You know, you've got a choice. You're a dentist, a doctor, or a failure. What are you going to be? And where does that come from? Why is that such a strong feeling amongst parents?
I mean, I have no idea. I think because, like, within our family, we did have few doctors and dentists, and some of my cousins are from the medical profession as well. So I think the pressure was on, and they always thought it is the only decent job that you can have. Whereas, you know, and back in those days, yes, people did used to think very highly of doctors, dentists, and they still do. They still do. Medical profession is still absolutely great. But I do believe there's a lot of other professions which are really good that you can get into as well, especially being a female, they are. So the pressure was on.
Holidays were to the dental surgery, or let's go look at the GP surgery.
Or like every summer, you're going to a science club, you're going to a chemistry club, you're going to a physics club. So I remember doing all of that. But I believe I was a very good child. I was very obedient. So I just said, yeah, that's fine. Mom, if that's what you want me to be, I'll do it. And I just wanted to make them really, really proud because I saw how they struggled. And even like within my childhood, we moved a lot between countries and cities and things like that. So I saw how my parents struggled to bring us up. So I felt like I had an obligation to be a very obedient child to them, especially being the oldest one. And then I had the responsibility of four younger brothers under me. I thought, oh my God, I have to be a role model now. And I can, you know, boss them around and show them that their sister is really good. And, you know, she's going to be achieving a lot so they can follow me as well. So I believe it was intense because, like every summer holidays, it was study clubs, it was science clubs, it was all about academic. And till the age of like secondary school, it was I was in that environment where, you know, it wasn't, oh, it's a summer holiday, that's it now. You can go out with your friends, you could do this, you could do that. We had a lot of restrictions within the family. You couldn't be out after 6 o'clock. You couldn't hang around with certain type of people. So it was, that's why I call it a bit intense.
Yeah.
But can I wind it back a bit? Because you sort of said it very quickly, different countries and different cities. So what does that mean as a background?
Yeah, so my mum was born and brought up in the UK and my dad was born and brought up in Pakistan. So he was a typical Pakistani egoistic guy. And my mom was like a typical British born girl. So they were two absolutely different people. So when they came together, they just couldn't decide because he would be like, I want to stay in Pakistan. And she'd be like, there's no way I can stay in Pakistan. I want to go back to UK. So there would always be a clash. So what ended up happening is my mom got married to a very big family system. So they went back home and we stayed there for about 10 years with the in-laws and the extended family system. And then after my grandma passed away, that gave, you know, both my parents a license. Okay, we can be a bit free now because my dad was a mummy's little boy. So he couldn't, so we had to stay there for about 10 years. And then we moved back to the UK because my mom's parents were, you know, based over here. And then my dad tried to stay here for about 5 years. And then he was like, I don't really like it. Let's go back. So we went back for another 2 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mom said, I don't really like it here. Let's go back. So we were back in Pakistan and the UK till even like I remember in my teenage years when I finished my GCSEs, I was so looking forward to doing my A-levels. And I had 7 A's and 3 A-stars and my results were absolutely amazing. And I was like, yes, I'm going to do A-levels. I'm going to go straight to dental school and that's it, start my career. And what ended up happening, top secret, my second brother, the one younger, he started smoking and my dad saw that. He caught him one day and he was like, that's it, guys. You're packing up your bag. This is no good and we're going back to Pakistan. So I was like, oh, no. And that was quite surprising for me. It was, you know, a big shock to the system. But he was so strict. He was like, I can't afford to have my children smoking in this country. And you guys are growing up now. I don't want you to get into this culture of gang fights and things like that was very common at that time as well. And we were living in Hackney. Hackney was quite a rough area at that time.
Not like it is posh now.
No, not like it is posh now. So we moved back home and I done my A-levels there for 3 years. And it was a nightmare because the education system over there is so bad. No matter what school you go to, no matter if it's private or if it's not private, it's very difficult. Their style, the way they teach you, it was very difficult. Mm. You just had these massive thick books that you just had to go through. And then at the end of the year, you would have one exam. Now, if you're not feeling well at that exam or you're not up for it or anything like that, that's it. You know, your life is over. You could only have one reset. So the education system, and there was no such thing as coursework assignments or anything like that as well.
I know I've never been to Pakistan, but I'd imagine culturally that must be really quite hard to keep switching almost between countries and possibly language. So, you know, you suddenly have to, you know, you're English and then now you're having to become Pakistani and then now you're back English again. You're how you know, your thoughts, the way you think and stuff must be really a challenge to cope with that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a challenge and the culture shock was a bit of a challenge because I found that when I was in the education system in London, it was quite simple. I mean, I had very simple friends and whereas with Pakistan, the college that I ended up going to was a very elite college. So there was a lot of competition, whether it came to education or whether it came to dressing up. We used to have like bonfire nights and concerts and have all these celebrities come to our college. And Valentine's Day was celebrated like crazy. Christmas Day was celebrated and all these celebrations. And I used to think, okay. And my dad would go, well, you do know you're not going to the bonfire night or the sari night or this night or that night or concerts. And I was like, why? Because she's exactly the same as us.
I'm Pakistani.
Why? But he goes, no. You have to put your head down. You just have to do your education. You have to study really hard. You're not going to get into all these kind of things. So that part I found a bit hard.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why am I not allowed to do that?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's, you know, it's the way you're born and brought up.
Do you think the generations thinking of yourself now, and, you know, if and when, as and when you have children, you bring up children or advising cousins or whatever it might be, do you think your view on the importance of education will have changed slightly based on your own experience of how your parents kind of ingrained that in you?
Yeah, to be honest, whatever they've done it for my good. And I think wherever I am today, it's because they kept me so grounded.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if I had the freedom and if I had total control over, you know, my life, I would not be here where I am. And maybe I would get into maybe a wrong company or have some wrong friends or, you know, just muck about and not concentrate too much. So even with the generation today, I think it's even more important to instill the importance of education because now people think it's absolutely fine. Social media is out there. I don't need to be, you know, I don't need to go to university. I don't need to go to college. I'll start blogging. I'll start creating some fun videos on YouTube. I'll have over millions of followers and it's absolutely fine. You know, I don't really need to get education. And as much as, yes, I agree, you can go down that path, but I still think having the basic foundation, having basic education, it's still very, very important. It's still very important.
And then after your A-levels, you then carried on your education doing biomedical science at university. So obviously your parents got their wish that you went into medicine in some capacity or other.
Yeah, some capacity or other. I actually said to them, I want to go back and I'm going to go to university. So I came back to the UK and I enrolled for biomedical science. And while I was doing biomedical science, my parents wasn't happy about me coming back.
So did you come back on your own then?
Yeah, I came back on my own.
Wow.
Yeah, I came back on my own. So I said, look, I've done my A-levels. I'm ready to go back. I'm ready to go to university and progress. So I came back, even though my brothers followed me, but I did come back. And then I enrolled into the universities to start biomedical science. And while I was doing that, I got approached by a company saying, are you looking for a job? Now, that was another big thing, right? So my dad's got five brothers and all of them have got one daughter and they're the eldest as well. So they're all in the similar situation. And in his family, girls do not work. You don't work. You just go and get really good education and they find you the richest guy in the whole wide world and they get you married and that's your life. That's it. The more richer your husband, the more successful you are as a woman.
Wow. Right? You become a very educated housewife, a mother.
That's it. So that was the concept. And that was the same. I mean, luckily, I was allowed to come back and go to university. But I knew that he was thinking as well, right, let's start, you know, looking for someone for her. And I said, look, let me complete my education. I promise I'll come back and then you can look for, I don't know, an owner of airlines or whatever it is that you want. Whatever it is that he wanted, he had really big dreams to finding the richest husband. So when I came, I remember when I started going to university, obviously, you know, getting your accommodation, there was a lot. And I said, I remember I made a call and I said, Dad, I need to get a job. And he goes, what do you need a job for? I'm sending you money. You should be fine. I was like, no, Dad, you know, I need to get a job. I need to start working and building my career and stuff. So you know what he done? He sent me a long list. He goes, you can't work in retail, you can't work in a restaurant, you can't work in a coffee shop, you can't work there. So I was like, so where am I supposed to get my first job? He goes, it has to be somewhere very decent. And I was like, okay, I don't know what you mean by very decent, but where exactly? He goes, oh, why don't you try a hospital or, you know, a GP clinic or a dental practice or something like that? So I said, okay, that's fine, I can try, even though I had zero experience at that time. And then I got approached by an agency saying, would you like to work as a dental nurse? And I said, well, I don't have any qualification. I'm doing my biomedical science at the moment. I do want to get into dentistry after biomed, but that's what I'm doing. And they said, it's fine. The course is only 1 year course. Your classes are going to be on a Sunday. So it's not going to interfere with your university. So that was the second course I was doing while I was doing my degree. So I started my dental nursing and then I was doing nursing every other Sunday. And then I was very lucky. I found a job, a Saturday dental nursing job. And that's when I got into nursing and I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. I just love dentistry. It's so cool. I love working with people's teeth. I love looking after the patients, the whole customer journey. And I was very intrigued. So when I finished my nursing, I was in the last year of biomedical science. The place where I was working on a Saturday, SmilePod, I remember, they offered me a practice manager role. They said, look, you're absolutely amazing. We want to offer you a practice manager role. And I was like, yes, great. Lovely salary, nice short timings. It was only from 9 till 3 at that time, because they had another manager who was doing after 3. So I can manage everything very nicely. So I done that for 2 years, absolutely loved it. I progressed within that role as well. I became their area manager. So I was managing multiple sites as well before I left. And then I remember when that came to an end, I got a job opportunity from Bupa. And I remember applying to that and thinking, Sama, what the hell are you doing? You're never going to get that job. You're not even qualified to get that job. But I was a big daredevil. I would apply to the biggest job opportunities out there just to go and get experience in the interviews. Wow. That's all I wanted. So I would really throw myself out there. If there was a role saying director of compliance, you will see my CV be the first one in that company. Even though it said you need 25 years of experience, I'm like, oh, forget about experience. I'll just learn as I go along and I'll be fine. So I remember going to, the day came and then I went to the interview for Bupa and there was two operational managers there literally interrogating me. And I thought, I'm never going to get this job. But anyways, it was a good learning experience. And then I got back home. I had my last assignment to do for my university and I was submitting that. And I got a call and they said, they actually really liked you and they would like to call you for another interview. I was like, oh God, damn. I never thought of that. I never, ever.
It wasn't supposed to go like that.
No, it wasn't supposed to go like that. I actually thought, okay, get back to job hunting or I'm okay with SmilePod, it doesn't matter. Or we'll apply to some really big firm again and see where it goes and we'll get some experience. So they called me in the next week for a second interview and I went. And after 2 weeks, they made a decision to offer me the role. And I was so excited, but I was so nervous at the same time as well. And I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. So it was a clinical manager role where I was going to be managing at least 48 people across 18 different sites. So I was based in Bank at that time in central London. And I thought, oh my God. And everyone was a lot more older than me. And I think they said, you are the youngest clinical operation manager we've recruited. And I was like, damn, I wonder what that means. So I was just like, okay, fine. I had my induction and everything. So I started working. And I remember, oh my God, that was the most hardest first year of any job that I had worked. Because yes, everybody was older than me. To tell people what they needed to do or to lead people who are 10 or 12 years older than you, it was just totally different.
Mm.
They would think, okay, she's just come in and, you know, she's implementing all what these changes. What does she know? Who does she think she is? Why did this person get this person? And they had a very good relationship with the lady I was replacing. And she had been their manager for a very long time. So it was very difficult to be just like her.
Mm.
I remember I used to go, my ops, my boss was really, really nice. He was absolutely a gem. And I used to go to him and I said, Stuart, I don't think I could do this. I don't know why you've selected me. And he was like, Saba, you'll be absolutely fine. Trust me. And he used to instill so much confidence inside me that I used to walk outside his office and I used to be like, right, I'm going to put everything in place now and it's going to be absolutely fine. So that I think that was very, very important for me to have that support from him.
I think it is because there's a phrase, isn't there, that if you're good enough, you're old enough. And I think if you're appointing somebody, that's a great attitude to have. But when you then end up having people working with you in your team who you're more senior to, it doesn't always flow because, you know, you've got imposter syndrome. You've got, you know, the person before me had been doing a job for years and years. Am I going to gel with a team? So in the early days, you know, that's a...
And everybody's opinionated, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. that's very hard to go into an environment like that and succeed very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. But I had good support. I had good people around me. And then the best thing was everything that I wanted to experience. Bupa was an awesome company to work with. I know they've made a lot of changes now, but when they initially started their dental practice, it was very good. They invested so much in their people. We had a massive training budget. We could go on courses. Mm. We had amazing health benefits as well. We had flexibility. There was progression. It was very, very good. And the best thing about my role was it wasn't very stagnant, even though I was a clinical service manager. But apart from managing people, I would work on multiple other projects as well. So I did work in the acquisition department, integration department. I went into finance. I also went into compliance. So he would let me go. He would say, go, Saba, and work in different departments so you can build your confidence up and you can really understand the whole, you know, what Bupa is. That was the one really good thing. I think if I never got to do that, I wouldn't have the experience that I've made like till today.
And working in that environment, Saba, because, you know, the majority of people that listen to this work in independently owned dental practices. So are the issues that affect corporately owned dental practices, like the Bupa environment, are they the same issues just at a bigger level that affect independently owned dental practices at a smaller level? There aren't a difference in the issues that affect those businesses.
Yeah, I think with the corporates, though, you do get a lot more pressure. You have got a lot more pressure with the figures and the revenues and the finance. You've got constant meetings. And again, if the numbers are not according to the numbers that their finance team are looking for, that's it. You know, they start having a lot of meetings, understanding why and where they're going wrong. So I felt like with corporates, it was a lot of pressure that was constantly there. A lot of like goals, KPI targets that had to be discussed on a monthly, 6-monthly and an annual basis. And it was, you know, set in stone no matter what. Whereas sometimes with private individual practices, once it gets really busy, people understand, oh, you know what, we've had a really busy month. Let's have another meeting next month and see how it goes. So corporates, yes, they are different, you know, kettle of fishes, and they are quite pressurizing when you are working for them.
And in reality, the sweet spot's probably somewhere in the middle. I think you can measure everything to the nth degree and it doesn't actually add much value to the business. But then equally at the other end, I think lots of dental practices, because the simple economics of a dental practice work quite well, they're profitable. And I think sometimes practice owners don't necessarily they don't really know what the key profit centers in their business are. And so I think there's probably a midpoint that says at an independently owned level, there probably should be more tracking, more KPIs and more management. Yeah. And it sounds very much at the corporate end, which is very much kind of shareholder-driven value. Let's kind of make sure that everything's been sort of ticked and tracked as it should be.
Yeah, definitely. So Bupa, was a very good, very good experience, and I was there for about 5 years.
So that sort of moves on to your own practice that you set up, because I'm just interested in what you put into that. Did you have you chosen a midpoint between bonkers monitoring and laissez-faire?
Yeah, to be honest, even before the practice, I helped nearly 68 dental squats to establish.
Is this so through the compliance company that you've got? Yeah,
through the compliance, through Smart Dental Compliance. So we've done about 68 squat practices in the last 6 years. And I love squats. I absolutely love squats because you can really, you know, put your stamp onto it. In terms of the design work, you can really be very clever with it, very creative with it. And I think they are, from logistically, they're slightly more easier than buying a running practice. But again, the security of buying a running practice is a lot more better. So when I was, you know, when I'm helping my clients do a squat, one of my staff member in the compliance business said, why don't you open your own squat? And I said, nah, I'm not doing my own squat. You must be joking. I'm done with helping people. You think I'll be able to manage my own squat? There's no way. And I said, no, come on, Saba, you're really creative. You've got good contacts. And I actually think you should do it. And I said, with all the other things that I'm doing right now, do you actually think I could do it? And he goes, yeah, definitely you can do it. And I thought, okay, why not? Give it a try. So I remember when I started looking for locations, and obviously, typically, it had to be somewhere near home. So I'm located in Southgate in North London. So I started looking at, you know, the close areas by, and I came across this shop. And with me, I have like good, I have good gut instinct. When I go and look at something, I can very easily visualize what I want that place to look like for me. So when I went to see this place, it was a very old clothes shop called Wild Daisy, and it had been shut down. And I went in And instantly I could imagine, I was like, yeah, so the surgery is going to go here and here, reception area here, back area, relaxation area, decon, downstairs in the basement, everything. So it was all, the whole thing started picturing in my head. And I was like, this is amazing. I can actually picture having a practice in this place. And then I said, all right, I called the landlord up and I said, I'm really happy. So I'd done all the deal, negotiated the rent, rent-free, everything, signed the paperwork. Now, because of the compliance business, I have got really, really good contacts within the industry, whether it's equipment, whether it's like finance or whatever it is, I had very good contacts. So luckily, and compliance, we had compliance business. So compliance is one of the biggest nightmares of every single Scott practice owner right now. So because of that, it made it very easy for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to worry about it. And then the build work started. And then, you know, people said, oh, are you going to get an architect? Are you going to get a designer? I said, no, 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 no. Now, one of my biggest passion is interior designing. If I always say to people, if I was to live again, I would be an interior designer, 100%. I love interior designing. It's something that really is therapeutic for me and I really enjoy doing. So I designed the whole practice. The build work took 3 months. Obviously, the build work is always difficult because constantly managing builders and nagging. And then the thing is, because I'm not a professional interior designer, I would see them do something. I'd be like, nah, change it. And that's what they hate, right? They're just like, oh my God, you're constantly changing stuff. You can't make your mind up. I was like, yeah, but it doesn't look nice. So please. So I remember it was a bit of a struggle with them. But yeah, now when I look at the end product, people actually come in and say, what is this place? And I say, it's a dental practice. They say, oh my God, it's the most therapeutic place I've ever seen. And even my concept, when I was creating a practice, I was very conscious. I didn't want to create a practice just like a normal dental practice. My patient journey, I wanted it very different. So my patient journey that I designed was when a patient comes in for, let's say, composite bonding, implant extraction, for a very nerve-wracking treatment, they would actually come to the therapy room for a 15 minutes massage. So they would have a 15 minutes shoulder and neck massage.
Very smart.
Before going for their dental treatment. So that was my patient journey. Because obviously you've got all your nerves here and you've got the trigeminal nerves and they get intense when you're having a dental treatment. So by having a nice therapeutic massage, I thought, you know, it will calm them down. So that was my patient journey that I created. So we've got two surgery rooms and then one therapeutic room and one skin room. And it's worked out really well, to be honest. It's been 2 years. It's been up and running. I've got clinical director and we've done really well. We've got 155 star reviews on Google. Patients are absolutely amazing. And we're now even looking for our second site.
Good for you. Just rolling back to... because obviously the dental practice is a fairly new venture for you, but not your latest venture, because we'll come on to the business that you've just started and had a launch this weekend, which sounded exciting. But going back to when you started Smart Dental Compliance, which I think was 6 years ago, what was the trigger for you? Because you obviously were doing well at Bupa. What was the moment where you decided that you wanted to be a business owner?
Job with a decent company, according to a dad, so that'll be right.
Yeah, and kind of start your own kind of entrepreneurial journey.
You know what? I never, ever in my life thought that I would be to be honest, I'd be a business owner. It was never part of my plan. It was never part of my dream or vision or anything like that. I loved working with Bupa, and I thought I'm going to be here for a good 20, 30 years. Because this is the company. And even before Bupa, I locumed in a lot of places just to get a feel of, do I see myself in that position for a long time? But Bupa was one place until they got taken over by Oasis.
Right.
So when that happened, all the roles became redundant. The budgets that we were given for training, for finance, it all got taken away. Some of the facilities that, you know, managers had or area managers had, they got taken away as well. And then I thought, you know what, Saba, this is the right time to just leave and venture out and, you know, start your own thing. And I was the clinical services manager and we had a non-clinical services manager. And I remember speaking to her, her name was Agatha. I said, what are you doing? Because obviously our roles are getting made redundant and things are changing a lot. And she goes, I'm going into hospital compliance because I'm a professional auditor as well from Poland. And I've got masters and all that kind of stuff. And I said, hospital compliance. That sounds interesting. What will you be doing? So she said, I'll be doing audits, risk assessments, you know, doing their policies, mm-hmm. just making sure that they're compliant. So I said, okay, that sounds interesting. Maybe I could do that for dental practices. And because I had built so many nice contacts, I started, you know, tapping into my contacts, just asking dentists if they're opening practice, if they want their compliance managed. And one of the other ways, what I would do, again, this might be a really useful tip. I would see all these, I'll go into Indeed and I'll see all these, vacancies being advertised, practice manager. I would apply to all of them. I'll get an interview. I'll go to the interview and I'll say, they were like, oh, we really like you. Want to offer you the job? I was like, okay, would you be interested in me being your compliance consultant rather than being a full-time practice manager? And they'll go, what?
Super smart.
you came in for a manager interview and you're talking about compliance. And then I will do my Dragon's Den pitch. I'm a big fan of Dragon's Den. I used to love Dragon's Den. So I'd be like, right, so this is my company and this is what I do and this is what I will do for you and this is how I will make your life easy and this is how much you can save. And they were like, oh, very impressive. That's fine. You can come and do our compliance.
Wow.
And they, like literally 6 months, I managed to sign up about 8 practices who I would go regularly to do their compliance for them. And one of my first practice was 53 Harley Street. Dr. Mark Hughes.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of myself. I was so proud. I worked really hard with them, got all their compliance. They had 2 CQC inspections that year and they passed with flying colors and they absolutely loved me. And they said, look, we're happy to give you good testimonials.
That's brilliant.
So that was, I think I was very lucky.
Mark would appreciate something like that. Yeah. With that. Get up and go. He's that sort of guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he would probably go, that's really smart.
But that's very
and cheeky.
I was going to say, that's very entrepreneurial to
amazing.
Approach it in that way and also be able to spin it in a way which led to them taking on your services as opposed to thinking that's smart, but I feel a bit duped.
Yeah, yeah, that's brilliant.
You also presented it in a way.
Which, and obviously you have to deliver it, don't you, as well. But that is a super smart way. That is brilliant. Because I tell you what, that is marketing on a whole different level of sales, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's like, instead of ringing them up and saying, hey, now I'm here, I can deliver this. It's really smart.
Quite often in Sabah, there's a push and a pull in life. And it sounded like because of the takeover of Bupa by Oasis, that whole change in terms of how that worked and what that looked like meant that you didn't want to stay in that environment anymore. So that was kind of a push for you to do that.
Yeah.
But obviously you still had this desire to want to actually take that forward yourself. If that situation hadn't occurred and you hadn't felt disgruntled, not comfortable in that environment any longer, do you think that you would have just stayed in a corporate type environment? Or do you think this fire in your belly that you would have done it someday anyway?
No, actually I didn't. As I said, I was really, really happy at Bupa. And, you know, they even invested a lot in my training courses. I done Agile course, I done Prince, Project 2 management, whatever course I wanted to do. I was very academic. I always wanted to do a course constantly to, you know, improve myself and my knowledge. And they invested in that and they gave me the opportunity to move between different departments. So I was never, standing still. And I was always traveling between sites anyway. So I think I would have been there definitely long term if it didn't get taken over.
Can I ask a question? I don't know. Is your dad still with us? Is he still alive or whatever?
Yeah.
I was going to say, what did he think when you go from the Pakistani woman who's very well educated to then find you and marry you off to someone to then find out his daughter's actually set up her own business? I'd be very intrigued to know how that conversation went.
My dad is a very strong, hard person. He's not I don't even remember the last time I've seen him cry. I think that the only time was like when his mom died away. So he's like a very, he doesn't express his emotions. I know from inside, I hear from his friends, oh, your dad was talking about you. I was like, oh, right, okay. He's never actually confronted me and said, look, well done, I'm so proud of you. My mom does it very regularly. She's very emotional. So she does it a lot of the time, but my dad still doesn't. But I know from inside, when he talks to me about his friends and things like that, I'm just like, all right, dad, all right.
He's proud.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's proud. He can't quite say
it. Yeah, he can't quite get around to it.
But he's proud.
That's amazing, yeah.
What would you say are the myths of being the founder of a business? Because lots of people have kind of dreams and ambitions to own or run their own business. And I think there's quite an unfair phrase called a wannapreneur. A wannapreneur is somebody who constantly thinks they're going to set up a business, but they never quite get around to it. But what are the things that having been through the process, do you think are the myths of being a founder of a business?
Yeah. One of the things I would say is you need a lot of motivation and dedication and loads and loads. I remember when I had my my second child, it was a bit of a, I wasn't expecting it, and then I was pregnant. And then I remember going to my mum and crying and saying, oh my God, I want to get an abortion done. And she was like, what? Are you crazy? I was like, I've just started Smart Dental Compliance and I can't deal with this. And, you know, and she was like, no, you'll be fine. And I was actually hiding it from all my clients. And I remember one of my clients, we were driving down to Bournemouth, and she said, I want you to come and do some leadership and management training for my team next week. And I said to her, yeah, that's absolutely fine. As soon as I've had the baby, I'll come. And she, I remember her breaking literally on April 06 and going, is everything all right? And she goes, are you pregnant? And I was just like, yeah, I'm due like literally in 3-4 days, but don't worry, I'll come and do your training. As soon as the baby comes out, I'll come and do your training. And she was like, I didn't even know. And I said, yeah. So I didn't, I didn't even have a maternity leave. Even till the last day, I'd done my first dental show in London XL, and I was on my feet all day. And I remember it was very difficult. So one of the biggest things that I would definitely say to people is it's a lot of hard work. I, for the last 5 years, I haven't had any social life at all. Working 7 days a week, day, night, even sometimes my mum goes, I think you've absolutely lost it. But the thing is, you really have to enjoy it. I really thoroughly enjoy what I do. Mm-hmm. I love my work. I love working with people. I love progressing. When things all come to a reality and they start working, I absolutely love it. And when my clients pass their CQT inspection, just to look at that smile on their face, it's just like, for me, it's like a dream come true. So it's hard work. It's really hard work. And nowadays, especially, there's so much competition that you think, oh, am I actually going to succeed? But if you truly believe in yourself, I think you definitely 100%.
I think that thing about being passionate is so true, because I think if you're not, then the hard days are too hard. I think if you are passionate and you truly believe it, because the good days are always easy. You know, when things are going well, there's no issues. It's the hard days. And as business owners, a founder, there are hard days. But if you're passionate and you really believe there's something, you know, around the corner, you'll keep pushing. But without that, it's just a job. And that becomes quite hard to motivate yourself in those hard days.
Yeah, definitely. And you need a good support system. Mm. I mean, my family is very supportive. My mom's been very supportive. I've got a brother who's very supportive of me. So I think without their support, it would have been very, very difficult. And then my team is absolutely amazing. Like, this was one thing that I was very passionate about, because I always used to read a lot about how to make sure that your business is successful. And one of the things was, make sure you look after your team. And because I was looked after from my manager, it was very easy for me to come and look after my team. So I felt, for me, it was like a second nature. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I would say I'm the most proud of right now. Like, if you get any of my team members and say, what do you think of Saba? They would say, look, she's one of the most amazing. They even say to on every day, they're like, Saba, you're one of the most amazing bosses we've ever had. And not that because I want to hear it, but I just want them to feel that. I say to them, look, we're going to spend more time in this place than we do at home. Mm-hmm. So I want you guys to be, and it's very difficult, especially when I'm coming from a corporate environment. Yeah. Not a lot of my team got along with each other and they didn't feel that way. No matter how many leadership events that I would organize or what I would do, there were certain things I couldn't control within Bupa. But the one thing I love within the company is I can control everything. Mm. So we have like the most amazing team events. So every quarter we will do a team event. Last one was Go Ape. The next one is barbecue on a boat in River Thames. We've got a target which we're going to hit, and we're going to Dubai next year as a team. So I really do invest a lot in them, whether it's their training, whether it's their development. I try to come across Even though we've got little offices, I would never sit in an office. I would always sit with them. Whatever, you know, the problem is, I would always speak to them. And I think that's the most important thing right now. You have to look after your team. Mm. And sometimes they say to me, Sabah, you know, in my last job, we had the most tiniest, teeniest staff room. And, you know, the boss's office was triple size than our staff room. And we weren't paid on time. And it really hurts me when I think about this, especially owning a dental practice. I know exactly how much revenue, you know, comes in and stuff. And if you're not investing back into your team, I think it's a big shame. Mm. It is. So that's one thing that I would say that I'm really proud of, is I've managed to build a really good team in the sense that, you know, if I said, right, we're having a really tough month, let's do weekends to bring the numbers up. They'd be like, yeah, no problem. Happily come.
I've met a few of your team at the show, the last show, and there was a lot of energy on your stand. People were, there was a real sense that they were happy to be there, not just because it was a dent. They actually wanted to be there, and they were great ambassadors for your business.
Yes, we try to make everything really fun because, as you know, compliance can be a bit boring. Well, it is. Mm-hmm. People find
I'm glad you followed up with it is.
Yeah.
Audits, risk assessment. So it is quite boring. And then, you know, dentistry shows and things like that. So I always say to them, guys, don't worry. We're going to make it fun. We have different theme for each dentistry show. So this one was a beach party. The other one was air hostess. We were flying with partial CQC with flying colors with the A-line theme and things like that. So we try to keep it really lively and fun so they can have fun at the same time as, you know, do their work.
It's a smart idea. So, and just on the dental compliance bit, are the compliance requirements of owning and running a dental practice, are they getting worse? Are they becoming more stringent? Is it harder to effectively run a dental practice? Or is that just one of those kind of urban myths that actually it's not getting harder? Everyone just feels it's getting harder.
No. It is getting harder. It is. Because the CQC are expanding. They've got a very diverse team now. What they look for is different. So it's not like, you know, before you had the Bob standard list, right? If you've got this, that's it. You need this and you need that audit and you need this audit. And now it's not like that. Now every inspection is different. They would pick up on different things. Different inspectors would have different perspectives and they would look at different areas. So you might have an inspection where they're very hot on medication, or you might have an inspection where they're very hot on policies, but not audits. So even though, yes, they say that they are trying to streamline things and make it easy, but I think it's getting a lot more harder. There's a lot more paperwork, especially for squat practices. It's not really that simple and easy. And especially after COVID, they have put a lot of things in place. They've put a lot of requirements in place as well. And inspections are hard and they are nerve-wracking. Trust me, even I am a compliance consultant. I remember when I had an inspection for my practice, I was like, Oh my God. I hope it's going to be okay. So if I'm saying that, I can, you know, you can imagine how dentists would feel for their practices when it comes to compliance.
Absolutely.
Scary.
And just to finish up, we've got two questions we're going to ask you at the end, but before we get to that, so you set up your own dental practice, you're looking for a second site, you've got your compliance and training business. And then tell us about the other business that you're involved in that you had the launch of just this weekend.
Too much time on our hands.
And you've got young children. Yeah, it's like Wonder Woman. You can do everything.
8 days a week.
Very passionate. Yes. So we just had a launch of Pathology. So Pathology is a fitness and organic cafe. My mum's a nutritionist and she's been on my case for a very long time to change my diet, to get fit, because when you're working, it's very easy just to, and I love my chocolates. I'm a big sugar eater. I'm very sweet too. But, you know, when you start hitting your 30s and you start
I remember those decades. They're behind me now, but I do remember them.
Let me just try and think of 30s.
So I just thought, you know what? A year ago, I started personal training and I absolutely really love going to the gym. I'd go like every day. I started changing my diet, started eating a lot more healthier, cleaner. And then I thought, you know what? Every time I would go to the gym, I wouldn't really feel comfortable with the environment, because now gyms have become more like the social media thing. You go there to take selfies, to show your ass and to show your abs and all this. And sometimes I would feel really intimidated. I was like, oopsie daisy, I haven't got my six packs yet, or my glutes are not looking good at the moment. And then I was, again, I was so lucky. I was standing in Dentizen. So Dentizen is in a really nice street where there's lots of shops. You've got the Bushiu Park Station that goes straight to Liverpool Street Station. And then you've got the post office. You've got lots of other little businesses, really nice ones. And I was standing in Dentizen and there was a shop right in front of us which done like clothing line. And the lady was packing up. So I went in and I said, oh, are you moving out? She goes, yes, my lease has come to an end. And I always like on the whole row, I really liked that shop out of all of them. And I said, can I have the landlord's number? And she goes, yeah, sure. So she gave me the landlord's number. I spoke to the landlord. I said, I'm really interested in your shop. It's really, really nice. And he goes, yeah, that's fine. It's available. We haven't put it in the market. So I gave him an offer and he said, yeah, that's I accept the offer. He sent me the lease paperwork. I signed it. I swear the next day I woke up, I was literally sweating. I said, oh my God, what the hell did I do? I've already got a dental practice. I've got a compliance business. We also have a dental nursing academy, which is a weekend run thing, enamel learning. What am I going to do here? Like literally, it's opposite Dentizen. So, and then I thought, you know what? I'm just going to open it because all of our staff members moaned. They said there's nowhere nice to eat around here. There's not nice food and there's no like gyms around here and things like that. So I said, all right, guys, don't worry. You know what? We're going to open a really nice cafe. It's going to be all organic food, milkshakes, healthy juices, everything. And at the bottom, we're going to open a gym. And they all got excited. They go, Saba, oh my God, are we going to get free membership? And I was like, yeah,
get free membership.
We'll all enjoy it. We'll all enjoy it. So for them, we wanted to organize some exercise classes in our office. But you know, office is an office environment. It's very hard to do it. And then I thought, okay, you know what, guys, I'm going to do it and you're going to have lots of fun. So we've got the smart compliance offices are right opposite Dentizen as well. So we've got a team of 12 consultants here. And then we've got Dentizen team. So we're like 20, 25 people anyway. Yeah. So I thought, perfect. Why not open a cafe? The team can have fun as well. It's a business. Something that, you know, again, my brother wanted to do. So I said, okay, he can manage it all. And then brilliant. The fitness side would be good.
Brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a very, very successful launch.
What I love is you have this whole attitude of say yes and work out how to do it later.
It's all very mellow, isn't it? I love the fact that it's like, we'll have a go at that.
Rather than kind of sit down and endlessly write business plans and work out, you know, doing the old SWOT analysis, your attitude is I'll sign the paperwork and then work out how to do it.
We work it out. You know what? That you're absolutely right. That happened with Dentizen. I said, I'll sign the lease and then we'll think about it. That happened with Photology. I signed the lease and then I was like, oh my God, oh my God. But I thought, you know what? I learned at the job. It's fine because I've never done food industry. I've never. But I just thought, you know what? I'm going to learn at the job and we'll just see how it goes.
But that behavior is being reinforced because it's gone well for you so far. So the more you do it and the more it goes well, the more likely you are to.
But also the support of family, isn't it? Your mum can do the nutrition, your brother's going to run it. So that. It has an element of trust, doesn't it?
Which it's got a bit of
good for you, Saba.
No one's going to screw you over.
What a brilliant story.
Yeah,
what a brilliant story.
You know, my team, they make fun of me and they actually say, what's going to be next, Saba? What's next? Yeah. And I said, oh, another Dentizen. And they actually, I told them today and they were like, are you serious? You know, we just launched Photology. I was like, yeah, I'm serious. Why not? Come on. And they're like, okay, we're looking forward
to
it.
They've got to match your ambition. They've got to keep up.
That's it. So they're very supportive and they're like, okay, sir, when are we going to see the site? I was like, very soon.
Gotta go find it first. Yeah.
Well, it feels like this is going to be episode one. I think at some point you're going to have to come back on in a little while and we'll find out what episode
what else has
two
gone
looks
into
like.
That
we always ask our guests the same two questions. And the first question we have for you, just to wrap up, is if you could be the fly on the wall in a situation, when would that be? Where would you be? Who would be there? What would that look like?
I was thinking about that question because there's so many people I would want to be with, but I think the most theoretical answer, and I know it's a bit theoretical, but if you look at Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking, and they were two brilliant minds, and they made a lot of, you know, significant contribution to understanding the universe, witnessing discussion between, you know, extraordinary experiences. So I would like to be present in their conversation just to see how they exchange ideas, debates, how things come into reality, challenging each other's assumptions as well. So I think they're very like two intellectual giants that it would be nice to see how their conversation would flow together.
Interesting.
That would be a fascinating one. And if you could meet somebody, if you could sit down and have one of your organic smoothies with somebody, who would you like to take an opportunity to have a conversation with?
I'm really inspired by Stephen Bartlett at the moment. I think he's absolutely amazing. I listen to his podcast. He's so young. He's so entrepreneurial. He's got his hand in everything. Yeah. He does the health and wellness. He's doing the softwares. He's really, really good. And, you know, he's one of the youngest person to be in Dragon's Den as well. And I just love his enthusiasm. I love his quotes. The way he does his podcast with people, what he brings to the table, how he helps the youth as well. So I think he's quite an inspirational person for me at the moment.
Yeah, he's got a very fresh way of thinking and approach, isn't it? He seems to have landed at the right time for a right part of society as well. People seem to really engage with his kind of thought process and how he approaches things.
Yeah, I mean, even the way he does all his social media, I think it's absolutely amazing. Yeah. It's really good.
I think,
and then he shares it with
people. Yeah, and I think a lot of it is authenticity. You feel that with him, you really do get what you see, and you see what you get. It feels very genuine.
Yeah, definitely.
100%.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Cheers, Sabah. It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, it's been excellent.
We won't keep you any longer because there's no shortage of things for you to be doing.
You've got to go and do your business.
Exactly. Your team are expecting you to open your second squat this afternoon, so we can't keep you too much longer. No, it's been wonderful. Thank you for spending the time. Congratulations on your success so far. And I think it's going to be...
Watch this space, aren't
it? I think the next 10, 20 years are going to be incredible for you.
Thank you so much, guys. It was lovely being part of Dentology.
Thank you very much for joining us, Sabah. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.